First questions and introductory remarks will come from APN's president, Debra DeLee. I'm turning it over to you, Debra.
Thank you, Ori. I want to welcome everybody to our briefing call today. We're very excited to have Dror Morel with us today, who is the director of the remarkable documentary film, The Gatekeepers. I want to tell you a little bit about Dror before we begin. He was born and raised in Jerusalem. The Gatekeepers is his second documentary film. The first, Sharon, examined the public appeal of Israel's former prime minister, Ariel Sharon. And as we all know, The Gatekeepers is a series of interviews with the past six directors of the Shin Bet, Israel's General Security Service. It was nominated earlier this year for Best Documentary Feature at the Academy Awards. Obviously, a huge honor and tribute to the film, and we're very excited, as I said, to have him here. So I'd like to start, first of all, by thanking Dror for being with us today, and we have a huge number of people on the phone who are all really looking forward to listening to you and asking some questions today.
I hope I can supply whatever you want.
I'm sure you'll be able to. Let me start with the first question. The APN's study tour to Israel in this past December had an opportunity to see the film preview before it was shown either in Israel or the United States. And we were amazed at the power of the film and the enormous mix of emotions in response to it, from shock, anger, sadness, confusion, and for those of us who work on the peace issue, validation when the film was over. And we also found breathtaking the idea that these folks would have done this film. For us, to imagine former heads of any of our security services doing this was beyond imagination. So if you could start by sharing with us the making of the film, the process, what triggered the idea of making this film? How did you possibly get these six men to agree to be interviewed? And once you began the interview process, how did you get them to be so open and so candid?
Well, that's three questions in one. The first thing is that the trigger to the idea to do this movie came from the movie Sharon that I did. Basically, Sharon, the movie was trying to understand how come this right-wing politician, and I think the most extreme right-wing politician ever to sit on the prime minister's chair, suddenly in 2003 decided the most astonishing decision in all my days to dismantle the settlements in Gaza and four in Samaria, and basically the father of settlement killing his own children. This is, for me, the most, well, I would say, the most surprising, I think, all the Israeli public, and I know that when I interviewed also the American, Condoleezza Rice, and definitely George W. Bush, could not believe when they heard that Ariel Sharon is planning to disengage from Gaza and to dismantle the settlements there. So when I did the interview to understand why he did that, I interviewed his chief of staff, Bibi Weissler, and he said to me that the first time the idea of the disengagement came at the ranch, at the Sycamore Ranch, the ranch where Sharon is there, amongst his close advisor, the circle. And 4 months after that, he came out publicly in the Herzliya disciplinary speech that he gave. Basically, he declared publicly that he's going to disengage from Gaza. And Bibi said to me in the interview that in those 4 months, few things happened. And this is something that you have to listen very thoroughly, because there is books, articles, movies can change. There was an article in the most popular Israeli newspaper, Yediot Ahronot, which basically the reporter interviewed four former heads of the Shin Bet. And in that interview, it was a small interview, and in that interview they said that if Ariel Sharon will continue his policy, it will lead Israel into a disaster. And there was also a letter that was written by one of the top elite units in the Israeli army, and the letter of the pilot basically said the same thing. And Libby said that the article with the four former heads of Shin Bet had a profound impact on Sharon, because it came from the center of the defense establishment of Israel. People he knew, he worked with, he admired, some of them. He knew that they are not soft-hearted, they are not softies, as he called them, they are not bleeding-heart left-wingers, as he called them. It was the center of his defense establishment. And he said to himself, if this coming from them, then I better listen in a way or change something or do something. I'm not saying that this was the cause, the only cause that caused him to move or to do the disengagement, but definitely coming from his most closest advisor, it had a profound impact on him. And I remember during that interview, I said, wow, if the interview, this small interview with this four former heads of Shin Bet kind of moved Sharon in a way, maybe if I will be able to bring all six of them, well, I said then and five, Yuval Diskin was still acting duty as head of Shin Bet. Maybe if I will be able to bring them and to tell the story of the Israeli, of us, since 1967 until today, it will create the same storm that it created to Sharon. And I'm glad to say that it did. As you can see, you know, the responses to the film is amazing, and here and also in the States. So this was the source of inspiration, or the source of the first idea to do that. And then you have to persuade them that they should come. So I did that through, I thought thoroughly who would be the one that, through him, I would call him the gate opener, not the gatekeeper. And this was Ami Ayalon. Ami Ayalon was one of the initiators of that interview in Yediot Ahronot. And I knew that if I would manage to persuade him to come aboard on this movie or adventure, he will open the gate for me for the others. And this is what I did. I talked to him. He interviewed me for a long time. And at the end of the day, I said, I was very, very honest. I said what I wanted to say and what the political message that I understand that they stand behind that. He said, okay, I'm in. I'm going to be inside that. And then I asked him to connect me to the people he knew. There's other gatekeepers, other heads of Shin Bet that he knew. And he did that. And this is how it all started. Basically, when I'm interviewing people, I believe more in a conversation kind of interview, which is you are speaking to a person. I prepare myself very thoroughly to each interview, and I believe in very, very long interviews. And just bear in mind that I got the opportunity to speak to the people that were in the office of the heads of the Secret Service of Israel, and they were willing to tell me, well, almost what I wanted, everything that I wanted to ask them. So for me, it was, I enjoyed myself very much doing those interviews because it was fascinating. Every question that I've asked, I was really, really interested in the answers and the stories that they told me. So basically, the technique of the interviews were mostly conversation kind of interviews.
Mm-hmm. And were you at all shocked or surprised by the answers in addition to being interested?
I was shocked, moved, puzzled. My jaw dropped at least 30 times each interview. It was really an astonishing revelation for me, all those interviews. But mm-hmm. if there is one thing that kind of shook me completely in terms of that was there with all of them is the amount of understanding how much missed opportunities were there along the road since 1967 until today, which could have been resulted in a much better solution and future for the state of Israel, which could have... The most tragic thing is those people who are not with us, Israelis and Palestinians, due to the lack of leadership or lack of willingness to solve the problem. And when you hear that from those people, when they tell you how much missed opportunities were there, and I'm not referring now to the Palestinian side, the Palestinian had their share and responsibility in avoiding or not coming forth with a peace or wanting to create peace. But I'm talking about the Israeli leadership. And it's not only the right wing, it's also the left wing. The Labour Party leaders could have solved the problem much easier, much earlier, than and not create the problem that we have today. And this was the most shocking and devastating revelation that I had during making that film.
And do you feel that that folks in leadership positions in Israel right now that it will have an impact, that seeing those missed opportunities, that they will recognize that they have to change their views or their behaviors or their decisions at all?
You are talking about the leaders?
I'm talking about the leadership, certainly beyond Bibi, which would be an interesting question as well. I know he said that he would not view the film. Do you know, I mean, have you gotten a response from government or opinion in Israel who have seen the film and for whom it's had a significant impact on their thinking?
Look, politicians, the film divides and the film message divides the people or the politicians that watched it. If you come from the right wing part of the political horizon in Israel, you would be against the message of the film. If you come from the center left, you would be, the center is very pro the film, the left also pro very much the film, and extremists from extreme right or extreme left are also against the film. So it depends whom are you speaking with. I can tell you that, for example, today's defense minister, Bogi Yaalon, when he watched the film, he said, it's a good film, but I think that I know those people, and the director probably took, from long interviews, he took those sentences that suited his agenda, and he created that message. And immediately after that interview, one of the head gatekeepers came it was in a radio talk, and one of the gatekeepers came and said, no, Mr. Yaalon, I'm sorry to tell you, but the director didn't change anything from what he said. We are all, six of us, standing firmly behind the message of the film, and you have to deal with the message, not with the messenger. So, the impact of the movie I feel that it's a long-term impact, that it resonates, that it sits, in another month and a half in the Israeli television, we are going to broadcast five-part series of 5 hours of The Gatekeepers, which is much, much more extent, much more in-depth in all the aspects that you have seen in the movie. So it's going to create a storm as well as the film. And there's going to be a book as well from that. So if Bibi thinks that he's off the hook now from The Gatekeepers, he's got another thing coming.
We're very pleased to hear that, and what amazing validation for the folks who did the interviews to validate the process, your editing, and the presentation of their views. Dor, I had asked you before, you said that every one of the interviews was so amazing to you and interesting and jaw-dropping, in essence. Would you be willing to share with us a couple of those instances or a couple of the revelations of any of the former heads of the Shin Bet that you found particularly shocking or unexpected?
Look, I can give you an example from what will come in the five-part series. The chapter which I call in Victory for Us is to See It Suffer. In the movie, it's a chapter of 3.5 minutes, almost 4 minutes. It's going to be 60 minutes in the series, this chapter. And this chapter speaks about the way in which Israel, and primarily the prime minister, which came after Yitzhak Rabin's assassination, namely Bibi Netanyahu in his first term as prime minister, and after him, Ehud Barak, basically are the guilty part, most, I'm not alleviating the guilt also from Arafat, but they were much more guiltier in killing the peace process, killing the idea that started with the Oslo Accord. Everybody now in Israel and in America, when you ask them who is responsible for the collapse of the Camp David Peace Accord, everybody will say Yasser Arafat. And when you hear the story of what happened in those 4 years, which came after the assassination of Rabin, how basically Bibi Netanyahu, in the beginning, basically kind of, almost, you know, despair, made Yasser Arafat desperate in terms of the prospect of creating something. And then again, Ehud Barak, who came after Bibi Netanyahu as the prime minister, who was the big hope of the peace campaign in Israel, who is basically, I think, almost the peace movement in Israel after the collapse of the peace process in Camp David. When you hear from the head of the Shin Bet how Ehud Barak basically, because of his vanity, because of the thought that he can change the whole world to his flute, basically killed the peace process. And Arafat was corrupt, and which basically led the two people to completely disbelieve in the outcome of something that a peace can come. And this is kind of really shocking and amazing when you hear that. Because I was one of the Israelis in those times who believed that Yasser Arafat is the one that is blamed for the collapse of the peace process. He got an offer that everybody, like everybody says, an offer, and he refused that, which is, you understand that, but the process of those two people, or those four people, I would say, also with Bibi Netanyahu, you understand that the peace is something of a process. And when you understand what they did, it's really devastating and shocking.
I did want to talk about, and I know you've touched on this a little bit, but I did want to talk about what you think, Friends of Israel, what is the lesson that folks can take away from this movie? And for those of us who were so affected by the movie, how do you suggest that we take the best advantage of the message of the movie?
Well, I think that it is up to each and every one as a person. I think that what I aimed at, you know, my job is a filmmaker. This is what I do. And when I think that there is something wrong in the society that I live in, I express that in the best way that I could in the movie. And I think that each person has to do his utmost. I think that you are in your blessed work that you are doing should double your effort. If Israel is dear to you, you should double your effort in all aspects, in all ways that you can do and imagine, and do that. Things will not happen by themselves. I think that one of the most brilliant sentences that I heard from President Obama while he was here in Israel, when he said to the Israeli public, above the politician, and he said to them, listen, you know, politicians do not want to move. They don't like to move unless they are pushed. And the one that has to push them is the people. And the people has to push them in all ways, each one in his own small society and in larger circles, to each one how he can contribute to that. This is the message. And I think that it has never been so true about the Israeli politicians. The Israeli politicians don't want to move. They don't want to move because it's risky, because it's danger, because there is a lot of they will get a lot of resentment from unsatisfied parties, whether it's left or right, and unless they will feel that the heat under their feet, they will not move. And this is up to each and every one of you in each way that you can do. and move whoever you can move in order to move them to where you want them to move. And I know that the extreme right wing in Israel, believe me, has been exposed to numerous hours of material. When you see the devotion, when you see the really the heat that those people are fighting for their cause, every time that there is a movement toward peace, those people are in the road, willing to sacrifice almost everything in order to fight to what they believe in. And I don't fight that kind of heat and that kind of passion and that kind of devotion and that kind of self-indulgence to that cause of creating peace. I only see it on the right-wing side, on those who are wearing the kippah and willing to sacrifice everything to what they believe in. And I think it's about time that we will step and be willing to do the same thing as well.
Very powerful message. I appreciate that. Thank you.
The question that I wanted to ask was, what are the plans for the movie, other than the screening that will be on Israel Television on Channel 1? What are the next steps beyond that?
Well, beyond that, there's screenings all the time. The movie is moving in schools. It moves in private screenings. It is going to be released soon in the internet, in VOD in Israel. And then, you know, the Firefly series, this is in Israel. In America, Sony Picture Classic is handling that. So they are going to do whatever they can do in order. Well, they are much more in terms of profit. This is what they are interested. So they will probably deliver the message to whatever they want. I'm going to try to sell also the Firefly series to American television, because I do think that it's very, very important that it will be also shown on television and broader, for a broader audience to reach that.
This is from Mark Zivin, and he's asking why it is that Ami Ayalon was the first person to agree to talk. Why is it that he received relatively small part in the movie, or relatively little time in the movie?
Well, Ami Ayalon is the only guy in the movie, or head of Shin Bet, that came outside of the Shin Bet. All the other five heads of Shin Bet served almost all their career from the day that they finished the army. They served in the Shin Bet, and they grew up in the ladder of the jobs in the Shin Bet until they reached the part, the job of the head of the Shin Bet. Ami Ayalon did a completely different career. He started in the Navy SEALs in Israel. By the way, he's one of the only heroes of Israel. The highest decoration of valor in the battlefield was presented to him about an operation that he was a soldier in a commando operation in 69, attacking Green Island, which is near Egypt, in almost a suicide mission, which he really did an amazing heroic thing there. And then he went and became the head of the Navy SEALs of Israel, which is one of the top elite units in Israel. Conducted numerous operations all around the Middle East as the head of the Navy SEALs. Then he became the head of the Navy. And after the assassination of Rabin, the job of the head of the Shin Bet was offered to him. And it was the first time that someone who came outside from the Shin Bet became a head of Shin Bet. And this is why he had a smaller job, but very, very influential in my point of view.
Our next question comes from Aaron Mann, and he's asking, if you were to make the sequel to The Gatekeepers, what other issues would you delve into with the same six former heads of the Shin Bet? So if you had the chance to do a sequel, what kind of issues would you like to explore with them?
Well, believe me, since I did such a thorough interviews with them, I cannot think now of something that I would go into, really, because I'm dealing now also with the book, so I'm reading the transcript of the interviews that I did with them, and also the transcript of the materials that were the research material with them. So really, it was so thorough. I went in each interview from the day they were born until the day they left the Shin Bet, and I almost didn't leave one issue that I didn't go inside with them. And I'm not saying that they spoke about everything, and I'm not saying that they really disclosed everything, but everything that I wanted to know is inside the material, which is either on the interviews, will be published in the book or in the series or in the movie.
There's one moment in the movie where I think it is Ami Ayalon who says that when he was a child, he was taught to believe that there is a man who's in charge at the end of the corridor. Those who saw the movie remember that moment. And that he came to realize at some point that there's actually no one there, that there isn't a person where the buck stops, someone who makes the decision. What is your understanding of what he meant by that, and how has that message been received in Israel?
Look, I think this is one of the most important moments in the film, I think, when Ami Ayalon described the fact that there is, behind that missing door, there is no one who is thinking for us, or basically says he's speaking about the lack of leadership. And I think this is something that, well, for me, is the biggest tragedy of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the lack of leadership. The lack of leadership in the Israeli society, and also the lack of leadership in the Palestinian society. And the tragedy is that a lot of people died because of that, and a lot of families lost their loved ones because of that, and a lot of kids have died also because of that. And the tragedy is that, I would give you an example, there is a project now that is being shot in Israel, which is called Jerusalem 24, which basically describes Jerusalem 24 hours constantly, and they're going to shoot that project in a week from now. And the producer, it's a German producer, he's a good friend of mine. And yesterday I went to Jerusalem, I had a screening of the gatekeepers in front of the foreign ministry, some of the representatives of the foreign minister of Israel were there because of, I don't know if you are aware of the storm that the movie has created in the foreign ministry of Israel, especially with the ambassador to Washington, Michael Oren, who wrote an article in the most popular website in Israel, basically saying that the film is devastating to the state of Israel and to the what they have to do in the embassy in Washington. So, and I answered him to that. But in that evening with this German guy, I met a Palestinian man, and we spoke the whole evening together. And I thought at the end of that, we spoke about it, how tragic it is that for me as an Israeli, I don't see Palestinians. For me, it's easier to come to Telluride Film Festival, which is in the middle of the Rocky Mountains. It was much easier for me to go there than to meet a Palestinian who lives 10 minutes from where my parents live. And I think that the fact that the leadership do not see that and do not see the price that Israel is paying, the society in Israel and the Palestinian society are paying for the continuous of the occupation, is the real tragic of the world. And that sentence by Ami Ayalon, basically, he was a bit angry with me because the continuing of that sentence, of that story, when he said that there is no one behind that missing door, I cut it there. And what he continued to say after that was that it forced him as a person to take action, to know that he cannot rely on the leaders. And that put a much huger or bigger weight on his shoulder as a citizen of Israel to act, to try to change the reality. Because if we won't try to change the reality, the prospect of the reality changing by itself is really, really slim.
Sure. How do Israelis, what is their view and their trust level of the institutions in Israel, the Shin Bet and the security forces versus the government, so that when this is shown in Israel with 5 hours as opposed to the time in this film, and Israelis are hearing one message from the people who have headed up their security services, and a different message from their government, from their prime minister or people like Michael Oren, what do you think will be the response of Israelis, and whose voice will they listen to, and whose message will they most believe and most trust?
Well, I think at the end of the day, the Israelis will trust much more the security officials than their politicians. And this is why I did this movie, and this is why I chose to that movie all living 6 heads of Shin Bet, not one, not two, all of them, because when the message comes from all of them, and the message, and believe me, they are so different from each other. And by the way, they don't like each other so much, those 6 people. They don't have kind of relationship or formal, informal relationship between themselves. The only time that they met, all 6 of them, was in the premiere of the movie in Tel Aviv. And I think that the Israeli public gives them, or gives the security officials, much more credibility and trusts them much more than his politicians. Having said that, you know, it's a political movie. It's a movie which has a very political message, and that when it comes transcend itself towards people, people come with a political point of view by themselves, and it challenges them. And believe me, it's 5 months or 6 months after the film has been shown first time, 2 months or 3 months after the film is opened in Israel. And I've had numerous responses from people that said that the film changed them, that the film forced them to think, that the film showed them, and I'm not talking now about left-wing people, I'm talking about center and center-right, that said that just today I met in an editing room someone who came to me almost crying, hugged me, said, "I knew that you were here and I wanted to speak to you. You cannot understand what your film has created or what you've done to me." And I think, and he kind of started to speak about that, and he was really emotional about that. For me, it's really amazing to hear that from people, because when I am inside, you know, I am inside those materials for such a long time, so I really, you know, I hear that, and it's so long, so it's not really astonishing to me anymore. But it definitely works in a way that I wanted it to work. And I hope it will continue. And the fact, I think the most important thing is the fact that who are carrying that message. And it's not, and you know, the head of the Shin Bet, I would call them, you know, the job is to protect the state of Israel. Nobody can suspect that they don't love the state of Israel, or they did not dedicate their life for the security of Israel. And when those people come in and say that message very, very clearly and very, very, bluntly, people are forced to listen, and people are forced to face their most deeper inner beliefs in what they have believed, and in what those, in light of what those people are saying to them.
Well, I want to thank you for doing this call today. It is for the very reasons that you've talked about now, and for the enormous impact, particularly when this is shown on television, and there is even more material to watch. It is such a powerful message. Again, and as you had said as well, for those of us who work on this issue, it is an amazing validation of the things that we believe, and these are such strong messengers for ultimately arriving at the view that we must talk to the other side, that we must negotiate. And we are so appreciative, not only for sharing your views with us today and talking with us today, but for the remarkable film that you've made, and for what we believe and we certainly hope will be the enormous impact of it as more and more people in Israel and around the world continue to watch this film. Okay, thank you very much.
Can I say something before we separate?
Yes, please.
Look, for me, as I said in the beginning, the most important thing is that each and every one of you will understand that you have power, and you have to use that power in order to move people to where, definitely in terms of where I am standing in terms of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, use that power to move other people to where you want them to go. And you should do that. Each and every one of you should think how we can contribute to that cause, not sit on the chair and bitch and moan that he doesn't like that, and you have to act. And believe me, the same way that Ori haunted me for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, he's haunting me for this conversation. And at the end, he managed to bring me to, believe me, I'm so, so busy, and he didn't give up until we set a date to that conversation. This is the way that each one of you should act and should be active in changing politicians to act to move to where you want them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dror, very much. And I cannot think of a better message and challenge to all of us to leave with us at the end of this call. I want to thank you for joining Americans for Peace Now on this call today. Thank you, Dror, and we will be providing you additional information. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.